We've kind of been parked here for several weeks in our series through Romans. It's been very fertile soil. As I mentioned, when we first got to it, we had come through kind of the difficult, challenging parts of the book in terms of the meaning of it, and we get to the practical application part, and there's some very challenging lessons here for us and good things to think about, and so that's what we've been looking at in this series. And today we're going to wrap up chapter 12 before we move into chapter 13. If you have the ESV, you'll notice that verses 9 through 21 have a section heading that says, Marks of the True Christian. Now that's, of course, something the editors added there. But in their opinion, this is Paul showing some essential characteristics of what it means to be a genuine disciple of Christ. And perhaps that thought is borrowed from the first phrase there. Let love be genuine or without hypocrisy. It is interesting that this, if you're going to talk about what it means to be a true Christian, of course, if you had to pick one word to start with, love would have to be the word, right? If you have to say what is at the heart, what's at the essence of being like Christ, if we were to ask Jesus himself, he would say, love God with all your heart and soul and love your neighbor as yourself. It's all about love, really. In the end of the day, that's what you could boil it all down to. And so it is not surprising that if we're going to talk about the marks of a true Christian, we start with love. And it is interesting that, does that mean that Christians are the only people in the world who have love? No, you can find love other places. You can find other people who are loving and compassionate and caring people. In fact, it's not all that uncommon to hear someone described as, well, they're not very religious. But they would give you the shirt off his back. You know, you probably heard somebody say he'd give anybody the shirt off his back. And that even in itself is a teaching of Jesus. If someone would take your cloak, let him have your coat also. You know, that you would be a giving type person to someone who would ask. And sometimes you do find that in worldly people. In fact, Paul mentions that earlier in Romans. In Romans 2, he said the Gentiles who do not have a law, when they by nature do the things contained in the law. And so he refers to this fact that there were people out there that never knew God. And yet, they did a lot of the things that God told his people to do. They understood that you should be honest and you shouldn't steal and you shouldn't lie and or, you know, murder and all those things. And they were caring and compassionate people even without having the law. We see that today, that it's not uncommon to find people in the world who are have love. But I will say that the type of love we're going to look at today, the application of it, is one that is very rare in today's world. And it is one that is essential to being a Christian. That is love for one's enemies. Now, when it comes to the world's idea of being loving, very often it is a reciprocal kind of thing, as we'll see. That as long as somebody is respectful and kind and, you know, friendly to them, they'll be respectful and kind and friendly right back. But now if you're an enemy, usually the world has different ideas about how to treat someone like that. But Jesus gives us a very challenging instruction on how to deal with our enemies. And we're going to see that in today's passage as we get down near the end of chapter 12 when we talk about how a Christian, a genuine Christian, responds when someone has been evil or harmful to us. This is tough. But this is essential to being, if we want to be like Christ, as we'll see, then we've got to learn this lesson as well. So that we're going to be comparing Romans 12 with Jesus' teaching in Luke chapter 6. Jesus teaches almost exactly the same thing Paul is teaching here. So if you've got a Bible that you can, a paper Bible where you can put markers, you may want to go ahead and flip over to Luke 6 and put a marker there, and we'll kind of go back and forth and compare these two passages, and you'll see what I mean as we go along, that Paul is basically taking Jesus' sermon there and making application of it to the Romans that he's writing to in chapter 12. It begins with, down in verse 14, is where our section in Romans 12 begins, bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse them. Now, compare that to Luke 6, verse 27. But I say to you who hear, love your enemies and do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. So this is a teaching straight off of the lips of Jesus, which is that when someone curses you, you should respond by blessing them. What's interesting about that is that it seems to be a foregone conclusion that there will be people who will curse you. Right? I mean, when Jesus speaks about that, when Paul speaks about that, it's just stated as if when somebody does this, and here's how you respond. But the assumption is people are going to do that. Somebody somewhere is going to speak evil about you, toward you, to hurt you, to wish evil upon you. In fact, look in Luke verse chapter 6 at the previous verse. Verse 26 says, "Woe to you when all people speak well of you, for so their fathers did to the prophets." And then if nobody ever has a bad word to say about you, that could be a bad thing, right? And I think the point is there that it is not necessarily a good goal to try to make everybody in the world like you. If that was your purpose, what would you do? If life was a popularity contest and the goal of it was to get as many people as possible to speak well of you, then what would be the temptation? Wouldn't it be to say what they want to hear, to say what they agree with, to act the way they act, and to try to, you'd basically, whatever situation you're in, you would figure out what is expected of me here, what do these people think is good, and I'm going to be that. Now you get over in this other circumstance, and what do these people expect? Okay, I'll act like they act. I'll get over here. So you become kind of a chameleon, right? Wherever you go, you just fall right in and try to make whatever that group of people is think that you're like them. And that's a temptation if somebody really is seeking the approval and the praise of man, is to try to live that way where everybody speaks well of you and everybody likes you. And Jesus says, be careful about that. Because following that same impulse, the false prophets of old would just tell the people what they wanted to hear. Because more than anything, they wanted the approval of man. They weren't so concerned about whether God approved what they said, but they wanted to say things that made everybody like them. And that's a danger when we try to make everybody speak well of us. But in fact, that's not the mark of a true Christian. Jesus would say in John 15, if you're of the world would love you as its own, but because you're not of the world, because I've chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. So if the whole world thinks you're the greatest thing in the world, then you've probably become like the world. And that's what Jesus is saying. You become worldly. If you're looking for the approval of the world and you want the world to think you're wonderful, then you're going to basically, the temptation is going to be to become like the world. But if you're pulled out of the world and you're going to be different than the world, then the world is probably not going to feel that way about you. You'll probably remember over in 1 Peter 4 that he says that you don't run with the Gentiles anymore. The time that is past suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do. But now that you don't do that, he said, you no longer run with them. They speak evil against you. They notice that you don't do the things you used to do. You don't go where you used to go, and you don't talk like you used to talk. Now that you're a Christian and you've been called out of that, they notice that. And what's natural is that not all of them, but some of them will run you down. Some of them will look for ways to say something critical, say something ugly, to be harmful with their words. And so the question is, what do we do when someone does that? How do we respond when there's someone who curses you? The challenge is to say something nice, to bless those who curse you, to pray for those who would do that. That's hard. I think so. This is very, very tough stuff that we're looking at today. So as we continue on back in Romans chapter 12, having said all of that, there's another danger of this, and that is there any virtue necessarily in making enemies? And the answer is no, that's not necessarily something that we should try to do. Back in Romans chapter 12, look at verse 17. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. The goal of a Christian life is not to see how many people you can irritate. I think most of us are not that way, but some people, it seems like they almost get a thrill out of firing people up, like that's some kind of a good thing. And, you know, I've got friends on Facebook that I think are like that. They seem to live to just irritate people. And they seem to just get a kick out of the fact if they can get somebody fired up and mad at them. And we call that trolls in the internet world, you know, the people that just love to just say things to just get, like throwing a rock at a hornet's nest, right? If the more excitement they can get out of it, the more people they can get buzzing around and angry, they just seem to take some glee and satisfaction in that, in the ability to fire everybody up. That's not typical of Christ. Do you see Jesus in that? Do you see Jesus throwing rocks at hornet's nests? I mean, that's not, if you're looking at, and we'll come back to the song that Gavin led because it fits so well, but let the beauty of Jesus be seen in you from morning to close of day. Try to live like Christ. Do you see Jesus just going around just trying to work people up and make them angry for no reason other than just the fun of it? That's not a godly thing. In fact, he says here, if possible, as much as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. There's a very similar passage in Peter where Peter is teaching the same message that Paul is teaching, the same message that Jesus taught him. But notice how he works in this idea. Do not repay evil for evil. That's the message today. Or reviling for reviling. On the contrary, bless. So you see, Peter sat there at Jesus' feet when Jesus taught him this very thing. And now we're getting Peter's take on this. For to this you recall that you may obtain a blessing. For whoever desires to love life and see good days, let him keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, his ears are open to their prayer, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. But this is interesting. In the context of how we treat somebody when they are hateful and nasty, in the context of reviling and all that, there is also this message of seeking peace, of looking for a way that keeps the peace. So Paul says, as much as it's within your control, live at peace with other people. And that's going to take some effort on our part. It's going to take some determination. If you seek peace, if you pursue it, it means you are chasing it. It isn't going to necessarily fall in your lap. The peaceful option isn't going to necessarily be the most obvious thing. It may be something that you really have to search for. I saw a discussion on Facebook from on a Greyhound group that I've joined about 3 or 4 Greyhound groups. So now my news feed is about half people saying stupid stuff and about half Greyhound pictures. It's kind of nice, you know. I can see these dogs, and that's good. Kind of keeps your blood pressure low, and you know, it's nice to see dogs laying around and all that kind of thing. But anyway, they were discussing. One Greyhound owner was saying that they had a problem with their neighbor. Their neighbor has a pit bull that's a service dog, and they share a fence where they can't get to each other. But the neighbor is complaining that this guy's greyhounds are firing up his pit bull. Every time they're in the backyard, they're over there at the fence, and they're keeping the dogs agitated. And so the neighbor's mad at him and is going to have his dog, his greyhounds, somehow legally trying to say they're at fault. They're going to be declared vicious animals, that he's going to have to put all these things in place. And so all these people are commenting, what? Your neighbor can't do that. You know, go to a lawyer. And, well, one guy had this paragraph. I thought it was really good. He said, I had a similar problem with my neighbor, and we worked out a plan. We would put up a little sign, and then we'd let our dog out, and when the dog came back in, we'd take the sign down, and we both would look for the sign, and we would only let our dog out when the other dog wasn't out. It's like, well, there you go. That's not the first thing you think of, though, right? When your neighbor calls and says, your dog's irritating my dog, and I'm going to take you to court. What, you know, usually we just get fired up, right? But what is there a way here? Is there an option where we can keep the peace with people over something silly like that or anything else? And I think the Christian moral here is pursue that which makes for peace. As much as it depends on you, live at peace with all men. Try to be peaceful. There's no virtue in stirring up trouble and being ornery and cantankerous, but instead look for peace, even when that peace requires you to give in. And perhaps that helps us understand a very challenging statement back in Luke chapter 6. Go back over there to Jesus' teaching. Verse 29, to the one who strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. From the one who takes away your cloak, do not withhold your tunic either. Give to the one who begs from you, and from the one who takes away your goods, do not demand them back. Whew, I have always thought this is one of the hardest things Jesus teaches. In the Sermon on the Mount, in fact, in Matthew, it's in Matthew 5. This is right out of the gate. Matthew 4, Jesus is tempted. Matthew 5, he begins his public ministry. It just opens up with the Sermon on the Mount, with the Beatitudes, and you don't get very far into it, and Jesus is saying, love your enemies, and it's like it goes right to the heart of this very, very challenging thing about turning the other cheek. And so what does this mean? Well, let's think of it in terms of the concept of keeping peace, okay? I hadn't thought of it that way before, but when you compare it to what Paul says and to what Peter says, right on the heels of this, don't repay evil for evil and cursing for cursing, but keep peace. So someone comes up and they say, let me have your coat. The natural thing might be to fight over that, right? What? Absolutely not. This is mine. And now you've got a fight, or over your dogs in the backyard, or over pretty much anything where someone is going to try to get one over on you. And you think to yourself, that's not fair. And I'm not going to give in for a second. You're not going to win. You're not going to get something that's mine. That's kind of a natural human thought. This is mine, and all these things are mine, and you're not getting any of it, right? And so, but is that Jesus' way? It's not really Jesus' way, is it? What is Jesus saying? Hey, if somebody asks for it, give it to them. Somebody takes something from you, let them have it. Now, your mind kind of runs to the extreme, right? If you're like me, you think, well, good grief, somebody could just take everything you own, and you wouldn't, well, that may not be the point. But maybe the point is, don't be so eager to be so defensive and so, you know, protective of your stuff that you're willing to, at the drop of a hat, cause a confrontation. Maybe it's better to just give in. Maybe it's better to let go. And what would that do? It would keep the peace, right? Because is it really that big of a deal? I saw this news story that this week. Two guys got in a fight on a Saturday morning in October over a pork roll. I don't even know what a pork roll is. I think this is a northern food. Probably some of you know what a pork roll is. I think it's some kind of a sandwich. But on a Saturday morning, and one of them got arrested and he put in jail. The other guy's face was all swelled up from being punched. But he took his pork roll. Now, I bet somebody's thinking, hey, if you touch my sandwich, you know. I mean, there's probably a part of us that could understand that, right? You don't take my food. You take my food, you're in for a fight, right? But when you look at that story, do you see, can you picture Jesus in that scene? It's impossible, right? It's impossible to see Jesus arrested for fighting over a pork roll. I mean, besides the fact that he was a Jew. But it was impossible to think that Jesus would be getting some kind of a squabble over some possessions. But isn't that sort of what he's saying here? Don't let stuff cause you to lash out at people. It's better to let it go sometimes. Look at the song, 454 was the song that Gavin led. 454. And verse 2 is basically lifted right out of this same idea. When somebody has been so unkind to you, some word spoken that pierces you through and through, think of him, meek and mild, spat upon and reviled. Let the beauty of Jesus be seen in you. We'll see that in just a moment that's quoting from Peter. In fact, you'll notice up there under the title, it goes to 1 Peter 2. I'll have that verse up in just a second. But the idea is that when somebody's been ugly and unkind with their words or their actions, it became kind of a catchphrase and just almost to the point of not meaning anything, that what would Jesus do? But that really is the question to ask ourselves. How would Jesus respond in this scenario? How can I be like Jesus? And when we do that, then we let the beauty of Jesus be seen in us. And very often what Jesus would do is not our first impulse. It's often going to be the thing that we're going to have to think about before we respond and try to say, okay, I'm not going to respond the way I want to respond right now. I'm going to try to let Jesus be seen in me. So when we do that, I know what people are thinking. They're thinking, well, wait a minute then. If you just let somebody take your pork roll, or you let somebody have your coat, or they take your stuff and they don't bring it back, well, then they get away with it, right? They get away with it. That's not fair, because somebody's been ugly and they've got something that's mine and they didn't have to pay a price, and they should have to pay because that's not right and it's not fair. And you can't just let people get away with stuff. Isn't that kind of how we think about that? Well, the Lord knows you're thinking that, and Peter knows, and Paul knows. And so the idea is you're just going to have to let God take care of that. Back in our passage in Romans chapter 12, let me get my page turned, verse 19. Beloved, never, that's a big word, isn't it? Never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Never avenge yourselves. So when someone insults you, you don't get the pleasure of insulting them right back, right? When someone hurts you, you don't get the satisfaction of making them pay for it by hurting them right back. You don't avenge yourselves. You say, well, I'm going to let God deal with it. Now, what does that require? It requires some faith, doesn't it? To say, well, first of all, I want to have faith that this way that God is telling me to do is okay, and this is all right, and this is going to work out. I'm going to trust that God knows what he's talking about, and I'm not going to do what I could do to this guy right now. Well, let it go. And I'm going to trust that God is going to deal with it, that I don't have to worry about it, that God is just, there'll be justice, but I'm going to leave it to God. And what that shows is a trust and a faith on your part. And that's exactly what Peter says in the passage that's cited in the song. For to this you've been called because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you might follow in his steps. Be like me, he said. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. Think of how he was reviled, spat upon him. Now, whatever the right word is, let the beauty of Jesus be seen in you. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but what did he do? He trusted himself to him who judges justly. Jesus gave us the example of saying, I'm not going to, even though I could, I'm not going to lash back out. I'm going to leave it to God. I'm going to let God deal with it. He entrusted himself. It's a matter of faith. When we let it go, and you say, you know what? God's going to take care of this. I'm going to let God handle it. I'm going to let God take care of you. I'm not going to be the one to lash back out. I'm going to leave it up to God. That takes faith, and it shows trust. And that's what Jesus did. Jesus said, look, I'm walking this path. Now you just follow right in behind me, and you do what I did. And that's how we let the beauty of Jesus be seen in us. Now, by the way, one of the ways that God deals with it, back in Romans now, we're going to peek over in chapter 13. One of the ways that God does take vengeance, it's not all about the final judgment day. Sometimes he deals with stuff here and now. And one of the ways that he deals with stuff here and now is through law enforcement. Look at chapter 13, beginning verse 3. Rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who's in authority? Then do what is good, and you'll receive his approval. For he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. So God has several tools at his disposal for dealing with people that do the wrong stuff. And one of them is the powers that be. And so when someone has done you wrong, someone has stolen, someone has hurt you, someone's been hateful and harmful, there is a place. And this doesn't apply to every situation, obviously. Somebody could just yell and cuss at you. There may not be anything the police would do about it. But there is a place for law enforcement to step in and say, hey, we're not going to put up with that. You're going to jail. You'll be fined or whatever. And that is a rightful place for the governing authorities. When they do that, they're acting as God's servant. But the point is that it is not for you and me who, if we're not in that position, it is not for us to take our own vengeance on other people, but to leave it to God. And finally, not only not take vengeance, but here we step it up to the final notch of a very radical idea, and that is, besides not lashing out when you want to do something, actually do something good. Back to Romans chapter 12, verse 20. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. for by so doing you will heap burning coals on his head. And so, as opposed to seeing an opportunity where you could fire back and fight fire with fire and all that, and you're going to get even, and you're going to make them suffer for what they did to you, instead, bless them. Do something kind. Do something nice. Say something thoughtful and helpful. Show an act of kindness to this person who's been mean to you. Now that, and when I said earlier, I think you see a lot of love in the world in some ways. I mean, in the world knows a certain kind of love. But I don't think you see this very often. And I think when you do this, you're going to be very, very different from how most people respond in these circumstances. But you're going to let the beauty of Jesus be seen in you. I could have just titled the song, that song, but when we do that Jesus will shine through us because that is so unusual. In fact, back now to Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6 and verse 31, he begins with the golden rule. As you wish others do to you, do so to them. When you think of the golden rule, if you were hungry, what would you want someone to do? If you were thirsty, what would you hope somebody would do? So you do the same. Even to your enemies? Yes. Verse 32, if you love those who love you, what benefit is that? Even sinners love those who love them. See, the world knows a certain kind of love. If you do good to those who do good to you, what benefit is that to you? Even sinners do the same. If you lend to those from whom you expect to receive credit, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to get back the same amount. But you, verse 35, you love your enemies, do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for He is kind to the ungrateful and the evil. Be merciful, even as your Father is merciful. And I think exactly what Jesus is saying here is that the world knows a kind of love that is friendly to people who are friendly, respectful to people who are, like, you earn my respect and I'll treat you right. If you're honest with me, I'll be honest with you. If you're fair with me, I'll be fair with you. If you're a good neighbor, I'll be a good neighbor. That's a kind of a worldly thing. And when you live up to that standard, you don't really get any credit from God for that because that's sort of just being a decent human being. And that's really what, that's just the baseline level for not being a rotten person, right? But if you don't, that's not really something special. You know, if you're nice to everybody that's nice to you, well, good for you, but so is everybody else. That's what Jesus is saying, right? But now you want to be like God. You want to be like Christ. You want to be a disciple. You be kind to people who are mean to you. And you do something nice for somebody who's done something nasty to you. And now you're going to be different. And now you're going to be like your Father. And you'll be merciful even as God is merciful. Now, when we do that, for our last verse, look back to Romans chapter 12. For our last verse, I want to emphasize the way that this ends. Here's the cool thing about it. Verse 21. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. I think sometimes people so badly want to repay evil for evil is they don't want the bad guy to win. So somebody has been mean or nasty, or they've taken something that wasn't theirs, they've been unfair. And then if you just let that go, well, they get away with it. And it looks like they win, right? And then you think, well, that's not right. He's been ugly. She's been terrible. And she just wins because she walks away and nothing has happened. She didn't pay any horrible price or he didn't pay a price. They win. But Paul says, oh, think about this. So let's say that you respond in kind, where you think of the perfect comeback. Or you wait, you bide your time, and there's an opportunity, and now that person is in a weak position, and you have the opportunity to really crush them and just get that sweet vengeance. What's happened now? You've both been mean to each other, right? Who wins in that situation? Satan wins, if you ask me. Because now you've got everybody being mean to everybody else, right? So you've got somebody cursing somebody and the other person cursing them back. What's that picture look like? Two people cursing each other. You see Jesus in that? Absolutely not. What you see is the devil in that. The whole world just kind of eating at itself and this never-ending conflict. Who wins? You win, they win. Nobody wins. Everybody loses. On the other hand, somebody is ugly and hateful to you, and now you think it through, and you respond the way Jesus would. You respond with kindness. You respond with grace. You let it go. If possible, you even say something nice. Now who has won? Good has won over evil. Because they didn't get you to stoop down and act just like them. The devil didn't tempt you into sinning just because someone sinned against you. In fact, you resisted the urge. You did the right thing. And as a result of that, good is overcomes evil. Evil tried, but evil couldn't win because you decided to follow the path of Jesus. And in the end of the day, good wins. And sometimes a beautiful thing comes out of all that, right? Not every time, but you've all heard those stories where somebody's being mean and nasty and the other person responds with kindness and it changes the whole dynamic of the whole thing. And you know, we could think of lots of examples of that kind of thing where it pricks the other person's heart. Now, there's no guarantee of that, but I think that's the whole idea of the hot coals. I mean, it really makes them stop and think because it's hard to keep being nasty to somebody who's going to be kind to you. There is no guarantee that they're going to turn around and now be nice, and it doesn't matter if they are or not. But in the end, you have been victorious because you have done what the Lord would have you to do, and that is the mark of a true Christian. So as we leave chapter 12 behind, that we leave on this note of victory, of good over evil. Now, is that an easy victory? Nope. It goes against a lot of our kind of instinctive thoughts about how to deal with people who are being mean. And yet, it is what it means to be a genuine Christian. And so that's the challenge for us this week. I hope you don't have to put any of this into practice this week. I hope nobody's mean to any of you. I hope nobody curses us. I hope nobody takes something from you. I hope you don't have to, hopefully this won't have to apply this week. But it might. Somebody might mistreat you. Somebody might say something mean about you. You may find out that somebody's running you down. You may find out that, or somebody might get mad and yell at you. And when they do, you'll stop and think for a minute. And say, let the beauty of Jesus be seen in me. How can I handle this situation in a way that glorifies God, where good is going to win in the end? That's the challenge for us this week. If there's someone here today who needs to make something right in your life, and if we can help you, we would love to do that. Let us know as we stand and sing.